Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer. Matt Doyle is here. Taylor Twelvin will be here very soon. The race to SACE is over, Doyle. We've crossed the finish line. Now fully 20.6% of all MLS Cups in history belong to one team. Your past, your present, perhaps your future Kings, LA Galaxy, Ricky Pooge, and I quote, "We are the kings of MLS. Lift your jersey in the air. Hopefully it has your own name on it. Kiss not the badge, but maybe also the badge, but your last name." And oh my God, Doyle, fire. We have to stop the show. There is a fire in my basement as this shrine is out of freaking
This is
control.
Why
it's a bonfire.
This is why Kalen forgot, I'm using air quotes, forgot his microphone, so he would not have to partake of this.
That is the sound of oxygen being sucked into the candles at said shrine. The Beckham candle going crazy. The Robbie Keane candle burnt down to a nub. The Landon Donovan candle is just a puddle of wax. It is the Galaxy's day, Doyle. They have their sixth MLS Cup championship. The facts. 10 years to the day after they won their last one, December 7th, 2014. Now, December 7th, 2024, two historic days for the club. They're back at the mountaintop. Nobody is even within two cups of them. DC United hanging down at four. The Galaxy in a league of their own. It's all dedicated to one man, Ricky Pooge, Doyle. Ricky Pooge, he was ready to join the celebrations. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Greg Vanney finally gets one for the Galaxy after losing three as a player. Maya Yoshida finally wins just a trophy late into his 30s. That is an example that I envy. I envy deeply. Marco Reus realizes Dortmund is awful. It's just a terrible place. It's not sunny. You don't win championships there. Why not go to LA? That's the beautiful place to be for yourself, for your family, for the game. And it's also beautiful that we now have 75 days until Saturday, February 22nd. That would be opening day for 2025. And on one of the opening days, Saturday or Sunday, we will see the Galaxy, the MLS Cup championship winning Galaxy, host San Diego FC. And by the way, we'll be in San Diego on Wednesday for the expansion draft with Kalen Carr, a.k.a. ETR After Dark. How you
want a million? You want $1 million idea, Weeby?
Give me a $2 million idea.
An MLS version of the Community Shield or Charity Shield, whatever they call it now, with Inter Miami playing the Galaxy a week before MLS Cup kicks off. MLS season kicks off. So what would that be? February 15th. You get the Supporter Shield winners.
25th. I just said it was 22nd.
All right. 22nd. So the week before would be February 15th.
Now it's like an idiot.
So you got the Supporter Shield winners versus the MLS Cup winners with silverware on the line a week before MLS regular season starts. Feels like a good way to get things underway. I'm in the content mines, man.
It's the MLS Cup matchup that the mothership wanted all along, but didn't get.
Don't blame me. I was rooting for Charlotte versus Minnesota.
Oh my God. Red Bulls, of course, lose their second MLS Cup. We will hit them in just a little bit, but we have to start as we always do with the best thing that we saw from the 29th MLS Cup. Get us rolling, Doyle.
Yeah, it was the build up to the first goal that the Galaxy scored. It was picture perfect. It was like a Greg Vanney goal. This is how he always wants his teams to perform. 15 passes, you know, they won the ball up high and they played it calmly, sort of side to side, front to back to front again, playing up through the central channel once the Red Bulls got a little bit exposed, and then a perfectly timed run from the left wing by Joseph Paintsil onto a through ball from MLS Cup MVP Gaston Brugman. For me, this is the type of goal, the type of sequence that I go into every game hoping to see, like that bit of magic that keeps us all watching this sport. And the Galaxy put it together at home in a cup final without their best player. I love gorgeous soccer. I love this style of game, and the Galaxy played a lot of it this year, and I'm glad they saved some of it for the final game of the season. If you score a goal like that, you deserve to win MLS Cup.
100%. Now look, Carlos Cornell did not cover himself in glory on that one. No. I hit the group chat immediately after that when the back of the net was just like, well, the heater is over, unfortunately, yeah, for Carlos Cornell. But if you squint hard enough, Doyle, if you just close your eyes and barely let a little bit of light through, you can imagine that Gaston Brugman is actually Ricky Pooj in that moment. And the big question of this game is, what would the Galaxy do without Pooj? Now, they did not play as they normally do, which is entirely through that particular number 10 position, and Pooj drops deep and he does so many of these things, because that goal is that little 1-2. It's the change of tempo, the change of pace that Ricky is so good at. It's the ability to create a crescendo when you most need it and when a defense is begging to be ripped open, basically. And my God, the Red Bulls were basically begging to be ripped open there. I mean, Peter Stroud and Edelman are so far up the field. There's acres of space between the midfield line and the back line. And all of a sudden, when Brugman plays that little 1-2 with Cirillo, it's just him. It's him, and it's a flat back line. And when you have a flat back line, Joseph Paintsil is thinking, I can and will get in behind. And when Noah Isla, as I think Taylor Twellman really expertly pointed out on the broadcast, drops instead of pushes up, not only does he keep Paintsil on, he provides all the space, the time, the vision, the angle for Brugman to do that. And I have been, I don't know if hater is the right word for Gaston Brugman, unconvinced that he is the right player for this team for a while now. And in particular, that's when they play him deeper.
Yeah.
But when you play Delgado and Cirillo around him, all the things that he can do on the ball can start to come out, in addition to an ability to be further up the field, to press, to be a little bit more of an outlet as well in possession. I mean, it was just a great decision by Greg Vanney. It was one he said he made way early in the week to start Gaston Brugman instead of Diego Fagundes. And it just all worked out in that moment. But there is one thing that the Galaxy really screwed up on that play. And I don't know if you saw or realized what it was.
They did not have Ricky's jersey. Right.
Where is the Pooj jersey? You can see, like, in a glorious moment for one Joseph Paintsil, when he should be celebrating, joyous, you can see he's looking around and basically furious that no one is bringing him Ricky's jersey, Doyle. Did you notice this?
Of course, it was huge on the broadcast. Mad. Yeah.
I wasn't watching the broadcast. So I was just like, I'm looking down the side. I'm like, help this man. Hell, he needs the jersey. Where's the prop? Like, whose job is this? Come on.
I mean, that was a logistical failure by the Galaxy. And I think they're going to need to go back into training and figure that one out ahead of next season.
Come on, assign roles. It's like a set piece. Everybody got to know their role. And when that's too early. Too early for the Galaxy. Set pieces, jersey assignment, not their strength. Not their strength.
Yeah, it was not their strength. I just want to point out one thing that we're going to get into a little bit later. You touched on it, that ability to play between the lines, especially once Stroud and Edelman were pulled up. There was nobody in that space for the Red Bulls. That's where Andres Reyes has been all postseason long. He had been stepping off of that back line, off of that back five, and into more of a defensive midfield position. It gave the crew all kinds of trouble, especially in that first game.
Yeah.
There was nobody to do it in this second. We're going to talk a lot more about Andres Reyes as this show goes on, because it is unbelievable to me that he was not out there for this game.
He was a starter. He was announced as a starter. Lineups come out. You discuss lineups with Andres Reyes in between the Nealis bros, as he has been for most of the postseason in that back five, all of the postseason, I guess. And yeah, right before kickoff, there's a late scratch to Noah Isla. That's tough. That's tough. We'll talk more to Taylor Twellman about that one. Now, listen, as much as we want to joke about the Red Bulls, one thing I will say is, you know, watching this game and having it be a bunch of New Jersey guys was pretty sick. So if there was another best thing that we saw or read, Doyle, it might have been that quote from Galaxy CSO Will Koontz.
Yeah, the Red Bull, this is Will Koontz talking afterwards in the midst of celebration. And it was reported by our friends at The Athletic. The Red Bulls had what? Four or five homegrown New Jersey kids, and those guys gave us the fight of their life and took out Columbus and took out NYCFC. I mean, those guys have zero fear. They are relentless. They're confident. They're cocky. They're a bunch of effing New Jersey kids, right? You want to talk about development and commitment to it, and that's from Mark DeGrandpre, who's the Red Bulls president and GM. That's from Mark DeGrandpre all the way down. That's how you do it. For a longtime fan of MLS, for a longtime lifetime fan of US soccer, and from someone who I still think the most exciting thing that happens in MLS is getting this sort of mixture of local development with literally some of the best players in the world. Like the greatest player of all time is here in our league playing against kids from Chatham, New Jersey, right? I think that is the most exciting thing we do. And to hear Will Koontz talk about this as the CSO of the Galaxy and seeing the work that he has done over the past three windows, and for him to intimate that this is what's coming next for the Galaxy, it makes me so excited because the Galaxy have won this cup and have become the team that they have been historically, almost in spite of, not even almost, I will say, in spite of their indifference towards developing local players, using their academy, using their second team, and opening that pipeline. And there is no greater service Will Koontz could render to U.S. soccer as a whole than opening that first team pipeline from local Southern California kids, which is still the ultimate hotbed of talent in North America, to open that pipeline to the first team and to start developing players the way the Red Bulls and FC Dallas and Philadelphia and now Seattle and RSL have done. If the Galaxy do that on top of going out and buying the Paintsels and Pecks and Pooges, this is a team that we're going to be talking about every single year winning stuff. And this is a team that more than any other can help build the next generation of U.S. national team players, because there is still more talent coming out of Southern California than any other region in the United States. So that warmed the cockles of my cold, dead heart. I am excited for seeing where he takes this franchise next. Obviously, it doesn't get much higher than MLS Cup, but in terms of the overall culture and ethos of the Galaxy, to see them steer a little bit in that Red Bulls direction, to see them steer a little bit in that Sounders direction in terms of youth development, nothing could make me happier.
Now, listen, Jalen Neal did come off the bench. He is a homegrown here. I guess Edwin Cerrillo is another team's homegrown that they saw more value in.
Diego Fagundes.
Yeah. Mark Delgado, I think you would have to count as just certainly an LA guy.
Chivas, he's a USA Chivas legend.
Homegrown. Yeah. He was a Chivas homegrown, one of the first homegrown signings. Mauricio Cuevas was on the bench. They've brought him back. But you're absolutely right in the sense that there is so much more that this team can be in Southern California. And MLS Cup champs is just sort of part of the gig at this point. All right, best thing that I saw. Dejan Jovetic understanding, appreciating, channeling, and then showing all of us he gets it by paying homage to Robbie Keane on his second goal. And my God, what a second goal it was. Like, first of all, the ball from Mark Delgado to go shout him out again was absolutely perfect. I mean, this comes off a goal kick from the LA Galaxy, and we'll talk about this a little bit more. They basically Red Bulls the Red Bulls in those first 20 minutes. Direct ball, McCarthy boots it. You know, Red Bulls win it, I believe. I think John Tolkien, if I remember correctly, gets up and wins the header. But in coming up, you know, now you have both wingers high, almost as dual forwards. They'll spread out a little bit wider. And then you have Dejan coming into the middle, and the ball falls right to Mark Delgado. And just like he did last week, where the ball falls to him from Alex Roldan, and he immediately gets it to Ricky in the right spot, right position to go deliver the final pass. Delgado, one touch, bang, into the feet, in between the lines, once again, to Dejan.
And no one is there.
But it also comes to the wingers, though, because when you push the wingers ahead of him, all of a sudden Isla's thinking, well, that's Gabriel Peck over there in space, because I just saw Tolkien have to come up to win the header, so he's a little bit out of position in terms of
defending 1v1. I'm going to correct you. It was actually Nealis. It was Sean Nealis who won the header, right? And then Ayla, instead of going with Jovetic, he actually drops to sort of cover behind Nealis because he doesn't want Peck to spin out into space and get in behind. So it's tough.
Paintsil is keeping the other Nealis bro, Dylan, from being involved in the play at all.
I'm kind of stealing your spot, but it's like if Reyes was out there, I don't think that first pass from Delgado to Jovetic is completed. And certainly if it is, Jovetic is not able to take a touch and play forward.
Yeah, not turning and running at the back line. I was a little bit shocked that Sean Nealis didn't put in a challenge. He seemed oddly indecisive and like not particularly looking to be physical in that moment with Deion, and I get it, but I think you have to be before he reaches the box, just yep. understanding that situation. And you know, look, regardless, he does bump him at the end and Deion looks off balance, looks like he's falling away to his left, and he sticks out the right and he just poke rolls it into the bottom right corner, and it is just such an incredible finish, an incredible piece of focus and balance. And I felt so good for Deion in that moment, and I felt double that when I saw him do the roll and then the finger guns for Robbie Keane, who was in attendance. I mean, that is just a really good callback.
Did Mindy have to run down here with a fire extinguisher and put out the blaze of your shrine in that moment?
We've decided that the house is that we're willing to sacrifice the house. I mean, at this point, I think, you know, just, you know, in the goal of creating a shrine that can be seen from outer space, we're going to let this thing go up in smoke. But you look, Deion has had a tough go of it, the right way to put it.
It's weird. He's had a weird go of it, right? Because yeah. I think he was expecting to be a starter, but then he was behind Chicharito and he had some really good moments, but then Vanny didn't trust him defensively.
He was amazing off the bench. Yeah.
He was. And I thought that he was going to be a starter, but Vanny never liked his defensive effort or maybe awareness. And so it was a long journey to get here. But where he is now is what, 21 goals and 8 assists across all competition, including the game winner in MLS Cup. Patience pays off in this case. He's a Galaxy legend forever with that goal.
He said he wanted to be the future of the Galaxy when he arrived, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
well, now he is certainly the present for them. And also in his present dad story, we keep getting him, baby. I don't know if you saw this in the locker room afterwards, cigars, you know, beers, champagne being poured on people's head. Deion throws the ball under the shirt, puts the thumb in his mouth. He announces his first child is on the way. So what a day for Deion Jovic and the LA Galaxy. Can I just throw in, before we get to Taylor, a best and worst thing I saw?
Go for
Ricky's,
it.
Ricky's celebration antics, man. This guy is, I mean, he is just lovably hateable. The LD jersey he wore, sick, absolutely sick. But then after the game to throw on the Ricky jersey with a number 6 for 6 titles, even though he was on the field for none of them, worn backwards. And then holding his own jersey in the air and then riding around in a cooler while smoking a cigar. Like, if you love him, you love that. If you hate him, that is like nails on a chalkboard stuff.
It's so good, Weeby. Every team needs at least one guy like this, because he loves the camera. He finds it and it finds him. Look, it's an iconic celebration, smoking that cigar while getting wheeled around in the Coke cooler by Diego Fagundes in the locker room afterwards. That's absurd, and it's brilliant. And he makes the league better even when he's not playing, and that, to me, is the mark of a star.
Yeah, those endorphins, boy, the knee did not look like it was bothering him too much, and I get it. Afterwards, on the Spanish language coverage, he said, look, I know what I have to do, and I feel calm about it, and maybe that's good news for Ricky going forward as well as the Galaxy. All right, those are the best things we saw. Let's bring on the voice of MLS Cup, the voice of MLS, Taylor Twellman, joining us here on Extra Time, a couple days after a champion was crowned. Taylor, we gave the best things that we saw. One was the build-up to the first goal. The second is just Deion Jovic getting his moment. What's the best thing you saw from this MLS Cup?
The atmosphere. It was so good. I don't think people fully understand how good the Western Conference final was, how good the crowd was at MLS Cup. And listen, Galaxy fans, we've got a good relationship between them and myself. And I think when I called it a cheese and wine crowd in 2013 and 2014, it ruffled some feathers, and then they missed the playoffs 5 of whatever the next 8-9 years of what it is. They are back. The Galaxy are back on the field, but more importantly, guys, it's off the field. There's a vibe, there's an energy, there is a little bit of an edge now when you're in that stadium. And I think ever since LAFC came into the league, they asked questions of the Galaxy both on and off the field, and good on the Galaxy. They've answered both of those calls.
Back to the
tacos mountain, and top. Beer crowd. Tacos and beer crowd well, now.
Tacos and beer. Yeah. And I was handed some tequila. Exactly. I did a pregame hit. They were handing me tequila. I was like, guys, I can't, this is not professional. I can't do this.
Oh, that's right? Not the weeby I used to know. True.
I know. They handed me a piece of asada straight off the grill. I mean, the guy went tongs to hand and looked me in the eye, and I was like, this is burning my fingertips, and I'm going to jam it in my mouth and eat it right now. It was so good. But the Galaxy are back, Taylor. Like, that was the question. They answered the question. Sixth MLS Cup. Big offseason coming up, but let's stay in sort of the present and the future. What does this mean for that club, that historic club, but then also for the league as they sort of get to this spot and think, why not? Why can't we get more?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm indifferent. I don't know if, listen, Ricky Pooch tore his ACL. So you're looking right away at 5-6 months without Ricky Pooch. I didn't see a lot from Marco Royce up to that point, so it's going to be interesting to see what they get from him next year. They've got to make some massive contract decisions. I think you're looking at 3 or 4 starters in MLS Cup that may not be with them next year. So I just – some of the people talking about a dynasty, I don't know, you know, with all due respect, they're not well aware of the contractual – decisions that are going to be that have to be made. Why do I say all of that? I think Will Koontz has his hands full again. I think he's got to make some big decisions. He's got to figure out a way to cover the hole left by Ricky Pooch. And then it gets interesting, but make no mistake about it. I mean, guys, put it this way. Greg Vanney only has 1 year on his deal, and that was an option that he qualified for by getting in the playoffs, guys. We don't even know yet what Greg Vanney and his staff is going to look like. So I don't know what the Galaxy look like next year, but I will say this. It's good that they did this 10 years later. It's now given them confidence. It's now motivated them. Will Koontz, Greg Vanney, players on the field. I think Inter Miami is still the biggest story going into next season with their new manager. What does their roster look like? I think I could argue with myself that LA Galaxy may be the second, if not a better story, because they're going to be the reigning champions with arguably a really different roster.
That's wild because I didn't see it that way. And I wrote the post-mortem for the Galaxy. And just looking at that roster, they have Maya Yoshida, who's out of contract. They have Gaston Brugman with 1 year left. But coming into this game, I thought he would be an obvious candidate to be a like buyout this winter because he's on $1.4 million and would open up space to do other stuff. But let's talk about this game because Brugman hadn't played much of a role second half of the season, and Greg Vanney made the choice to put him in central midfield, and we thought it was going to be so that he could battle. Right. So that he could meet the Red Bulls on his own terms. And instead, he's out there for the first 25 minutes anyway, doing his best Ricky Pooch impersonation. Deserved MLS Cup MVP. TT, he was brilliant.
He was really good, Matt. He was really good. I think Mark Delgado could also make an argument. Right. I thought he was really good. But listen, the pass to Joseph Painsil was really quality. I think we've understated and undersold how good they are in a way that, you know what I mean? The ability to play balls in behind, the ability technically to do certain things. It was the right move for sure. I think what gets really interesting to me, though, is that this becomes now, I don't know, are we having the same conversation if Reyes is not sick? I don't know. I really don't. I think the New York Red Bulls were shook. I think the New York Red Bulls didn't know how to do it, and give Gaston Brugman a lot of credit. He stepped into the midfield, put in one of the best passes we saw. It was the right move from Greg Vanney and all that, but I think it's understated to this point how Reyes gets sick, and then everyone else was like, oh boy, now what happens? Now what do we do? Where do we go from there? It really was a deer in headlights for the first 25, 30 minutes of that game.
Taylor, yeah, now what happens is you give up 2 goals in 20 minutes. Yeah, go ahead,
I don't know how to react to the Reyes thing because I'm, you know, as we all are, sort of field side pregame, looking around. Reyes comes out and I believe he does a Fox hit. He looks fine and I don't know what he's feeling like, but then it seems like he goes to the locker room. Word is that he had a little bit of stomach trouble there. And then all of a sudden it's like you're watching the game. Noah Isla comes out and I didn't know what happened.
What happened?
What?
Yeah, I honestly, we be. I saw in the tunnel shot from our camera when we had the handheld look through it. I immediately looked at Jake. Jake and I looked at each other like, hang on a minute. And just, I mean, you guys have known me for a while. You immediately go to your phone. You got to get an answer. And good on the Red Bulls. They responded to me right away and said he's sick. Now, they didn't really give me details because they didn't really have details. And what I mean by that is it just was he's sick. He said he can't play. The hardest thing of that moment is Noah Ayla was told 2 minutes before they left the locker room. So you're not even properly warmed up. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not easy. That's not easy to do.
It didn't look easy.
That's going to be a story for a long time and just something that the Red Bulls wonder about. Did Greg Vanney seem to have gotten it completely right in this game, Taylor? Like, we thought they would try to punch, but to me, they said to the Red Bulls, we know what you're bad at. We know we're much better at playing in behind, to your point. Let us magnify what you're bad at while the thing that we're good at without Ricky remains our biggest strength. And boom, there it was, the first 25 minutes.
Yeah, I agree. I do think, like, I think what's interesting about the entire thing is this, is that Sandro Schwartz said they went to three in the back because they felt, and I had never heard this term before, but they had felt Reyes as an inverted sweeper suited them defensively. Sandro Schwartz saw that they were the seventh seed. And he said when the playoffs started, everything he had learned from Red Bulls personnel and just talking to people around Major League Soccer is that the playoffs is a different. He saw Columbus. He saw more than likely Cincinnati. And he saw potentially Miami. And his thought was, if we are going to get to MLS Cup defensively, we've got to be better. We've got to find a way to get back to the Red Bull way. Matt, you did a real good job on showing those after the 5-1 loss to New York City, direct balls, touches, passes, all of that. But it was based on one player, guys. And everyone thought it was based on Forsberg. It was not. It was based on Reyes. So imagine 5 minutes before that MLS Cup where you haven't given up a single goal on the road, and then all of a sudden that said player says, hang on a minute. I know I said this during the broadcast. I'll say it for your listeners. I think the moment I look at Noah Ayla and I say, you're going to play for Reyes, I think I go to four in the back. It doesn't mean you change your principles, but Noah Ayla is much more comfortable in a two center back system versus a three. And guys, the first two goals, with all due respect, they were on him. And that's because he wasn't properly warmed up and assumed the Noah Ayla was their starter 27 games, guys. 27 games. I think it was one in a three back.
Yeah, it's those moments we saw against the Crew, and it's the moments we saw in this game where Reyes' instinct is to step. He wants to be aggressive, and at times that's his biggest weakness is because you can play him behind him. But when you have two guys next to him, he can step and you have cover, and when you drop, all of a sudden the balance just isn't right.
Boys, you better believe inverted sweeper is appearing in like 30 of my columns.
Yeah, it's a good term.
I am just absolutely grabbing that.
Okay, by the way, so, Matt, do you think I could have been an inverted sweeper?
No comment, TT. No comment.
No comment. Hey, no.
Biggest story of the offseason, Taylor. We know you got limited time here. So, yes, enter Miami. What do you think that story revolves around, and what other stories are you watching?
Inter Miami, Mascherano coming in. Guys, they had how many injuries from preseason and everything last year? They brought in new players. They've got who's leaving, who's coming, who's going, that's what it's going to look like. The Club World Cup, what does that turn Inter Miami into? Who are they talking to? Like the names that are around, whether it's Griezmann, Lewandowski, players of that nature. When are they coming to Major League Soccer? Is Miami part of that conversation? The second one is exactly what I just said. Griezmann has been rumored to LAFC. Does the LA Galaxy winning MLS Cup send the private jet to Paris, to France right now versus waiting to the summertime? Does he come opening day? That's a big one. I think the Galaxy, can they repeat? If they are, they're going to have to make some big roster decisions, as I alluded to. I look at those three right away and I say yes. The other one is Seattle Sounders are now in CONCACAF Champions Cup. That means they would potentially be in all of those competitions, which ultimately would be five by my calculation. They've got to make some big decisions. And I know I've said this during the games, and some of the Sounders fans think it's a little too harsh. They're not going to win MLS Cup if Rusnak and Jordan Morris are their designated players.
They've got to go out and make a big move, if not two. I'm intrigued to see what that is and what that looks like.
Other big moves could happen too. Atlanta United is a team that I'll be watching. Some DP spots there, including an open coaching spot too. Also, Taylor, on MLS Season Pass, I was listening to Robbie Keane teasing that he's talking to MLS clubs. Are we going to see Keno in MLS next year?
Keno wants to be in MLS. Keno's going to have two or three conversations with teams in the next 48 to 72 hours. Guys, I think someone's going to make a big run at Jim Curtin. I think Jim Curtin is going to be approached with an opportunity to maybe not wait out the 2 years that he still has left with the Philadelphia Union. Someone's going to buy him out. Is it New York City? Is it Toronto? Is it maybe Atlanta? I don't see it being Atlanta, but I think Jim Curtin's going to have to make a decision. And it's a good one. I don't think Jim Curtin's going to be out for a year, as many of us maybe have thought that he would. So the coaching decisions are big. This is Garth Lagerwey's first time he gets to hire whatever head coach he wants to hire. And I think that is as intriguing as any story as ever, because the guy he hires, or woman, they're going to have a direct correlation into what? Well, who are the DPs? Many people thought it was Patrick Vieira, and I know two or three of the names that were thrown around as DP options for Patrick Vieira, Atlanta United, and guys, it would have blown the doors off that building. So now what does it mean? What does it mean for the next person that is going to be hired? That Weeby, you're 100% correct. That's as intriguing as any story in MLS.
TT, I put out a column yesterday, the top five way too early 2025 MLS Cup favorites. It's the obvious ones. It's Miami. It's the two Ohio teams. It's the two LA teams. Give me a dark horse. Who could sneak into this mix that's not in that obvious group?
Atlanta United. I think Atlanta United has a great opportunity because I think the fan base is rejuvenated. And I think if you make the hire the right one that stands out and the DPs come in that are the ones that are there, that are ones that can guys, I think Atlanta could very quickly be at the top of that conversation. But a lot of there's a lot of buts there, right, Matt? So yep. You got to hit your home runs with the DPs. The coach has to be someone that it really has a grasp of that building. But if I'm picking one team outside of the five you just gave me, it's hard for me not to look at the potential with Atlanta.
Just so you know, Anders is in the chat predicting a Seattle quintuple, by the way. He said,
of course he is.
Everything.
Naturally, why else wouldn't he?
Why else? A lot of ands, buts, and oh my God, what's going to happen in this MLS offseason, which kicks off, well, right now. The trade window is open for half a day. Expansion draft coming in the middle of the week. Free agency coming and so much more. Taylor, go get some rest, man. Get the golf clubs out. Hit some nice shots.
Yeah, and I are headed to San Diego. Meet us at Torrey Pines, man.
By the way, absolutely, and the best fish tacos you will ever have, ever, is in San Diego. I'm going to text you guys where to go.
Love Book it. Done. One of the dinners is officially planned. Taylor, thank you so much for your time, man.
See you, boys. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
All right, big thanks to TT for giving us just a little bit of his time. He's a busy man. I expect that handicap to drop a little bit here in the offseason. Let's jump into the game, Doyle. Let's do a little breakdown here. Where do you want to start with this one? Maybe before kickoff? Those changes really set the tone for a lot of this.
Yeah, I mean, they led to both goals. We're talking, of course, about the Andres Reyes thing. You were there. Were you able to see anything of what happened, or were you able to talk to anyone afterwards about the whole thing? I know Taylor told us what he saw and what he heard from the Red Bulls, but it's just a strange situation.
No, right? It's what I said in talking to Taylor there, which is just that I saw Andres Reyes like making the rounds pregame, and it's kind of a crazy 2 hours before the game at MLS Cup because there's so many media responsibilities. There's so much sort of like, I don't know, fanfare and additional stuff that you don't see in a normal MLS game. So like you wouldn't see Andres Reyes walking the sideline to go do media, for instance, before a game. But I mean, 99% sure he went and did that with the Fox Spanish crew and he looked fine. Like in the moment I was just like, oh, there's Andres Reyes. Like, it's not like he's, you know, he doesn't have like the sick face. He's not, you know, looking like he's struggling. And then honestly, I didn't even realize that Andres Reyes was not playing in this game until the ball was kicked off. And I looked at the Red Bulls back line and I was just like, What on earth is Noah Isla doing in there? Like, what happened here? It's honestly shocking to me. It's just shocking that he was in the lineup, and then, as Taylor said, minutes before they went out on the field, all of that changes. I can only imagine what is going through the minds of, everyone in the team. Like, that's just a huge change in terms of profile, in terms of style of play, and also just in terms of what brung you. You know what I mean? Like what got you there? The thing that you're comfortable with in these playoffs that has worked. And he must have been sick as a dog. Like, he had to have been. I mean, if you're not, you just
gotta play. The weird thing, though, is like, after the game, they showed him. He was on the field in his civilian clothes, talking, standing there looking sad with the rest of his teammates. And it was, I
don't know. I don't want to speculate.
To see that. Yeah.
I don't want to speculate. Look, but
we've all been,
it's
strange. We've all been sick. I almost think like, if you're the team, be like, he pulled a muscle. He pulled a calf muscle and he couldn't move anymore. But it's weird because we've all heard stories of great players across sports who get violently ill before a game and then still play. I wonder how that's going to go over in the rest of the locker room, because look, the two goals that we already went through it at the top of the show. The two goals that the Red Bulls gave up were goals that came from that gap between central midfield and central defense. And all playoffs long, that's where Andres Reyes had been operating. The whole point of the system, as you pointed out, as Taylor pointed out, is to have Andres Reyes as that inverted sweeper, winning those balls and allowing Stroud and Edelman to go up further and go hunt and get pressure to the opposing midfield. And without that there, it was the wrong ask of Ayla. He very clearly is not comfortable doing that. And it took the Red Bulls 25 minutes to figure it out. And by that point, they were already down 2-0 and the job was done.
I thought it was really smart from Greg Vanney to pull what amounted to another MLS Cup surprise. I mean, maybe if you really thought about it, you might say, well, Gaston Brugman is maybe the guy to do that. But it had been Diego when Ricky was out. Mm-hmm. And Gaston hadn't started in 2 full months for this Galaxy team. And when I saw the lineup come out, and there were rumblings that something maybe could change in the 24 hours before, but when I saw the lineup come out, my first thought was Diamond Midfield MLS Cup against Seattle. And like, Greg Vanney's desire to put the opponent in a critical moment in just a little bit more uncertainty, or a lot more than they had been before, about their plan, about how that plan applies, about the personnel that they're going to face. That stood out to me, that Greg Vanney has sort of done it again with an MLS Cup surprise. And it so very clearly worked. And as I said against Taylor, what I just kept thinking in that first half was, Greg decided, I know what the Red Bulls aren't good at. And honestly, Orlando showed us that as well. I think we all knew what that was. It just that Orlando didn't have the firepower or the good luck in that moment. You know, Facundo Torres' chance jumps out to get the early goal that changes the game and basically, turns the tide to the opponent. And the Galaxy had that. And they said, look, we might not have our biggest strength, which is honestly Ricky, just like singularly Ricky. And the way that he controls and changes and demands a game be played on his terms, and the way everything else seems to just flow off of that. So, okay, if we don't have Ricky, our biggest strength now is still bigger than your strengths, which is we will play direct and in behind you, and we have the attacking players to do that. So, hey, on your worst day, come try to beat us. We're still going to have our strength.
Yeah, it's exactly that. But it also, not having Ricky also eliminates their biggest weakness, which is turnovers that turn into transition opportunities, and you can get gashed, right? And that's almost like, that ends up helping them even against the Red Bulls because of that game model. The Red Bulls, even with the adjustments Sandro Schwartz has made, and they were good adjustments all year long, and I'm not knocking him as a manager at all, but it's a game model that counts on opponents screwing up or opponents being able to get screwed up by the Red Bulls' pressure. And that works great in the regular season, but it's less great in the playoffs when you're facing exclusively good teams that are really dialed in. And the Galaxy are a really good team that's been really dialed in for a couple of months now. And then you remove the variable of Ricky Pooch, because even when he's dialed in, he's going to turn the ball over occasionally in bad spots. You remove the variable and you make it even more so just about the talent differential. And Paintsil and Peck and Jovalich and Gaston Brugman playing like he did, it was enough.
Yeah, absolutely was. And I was watching sideline for much of the game, and it can be hard to get like a big picture tactical feel. And I watched the match again this morning to try to get a little bit of that. But one of the things I just really noticed, especially in the first half, because I was on the side towards where the Red Bulls were attacking and on the side where Emil Forsberg largely was. And you could just see the way the Galaxy were looking to also, because Ricky's not out there, and now you can play Cerillo and Delgado and Brugman to just sort of bracket him, to always have a man in front to deny the pass in, to have a man behind to press quickly if he's not, you know, if you're not able to deny. It just seemed like that structure across the board for the Galaxy really, really worked. And part of that structure was Garces, Amiro Garces, Doyle, because he was the guy largely back pressing, you know, Forsberg if that moment came. And also then being the guy that ran him behind and defended into space, which he did so brilliantly. Like, I don't think we've talked enough about the development of Amiro Garces this year and giving Greg Vanney enough credit for bringing a young guy into a new country after the season had begun. Like, remember, this was in April when they signed him, getting him settled, getting him through some injuries, getting him integrated in the team, and then having the balls with like 11 games left in the season, including playoffs, to say, you know what, Jalen Neal, homegrown, Galaxy through and through, has been our guy. You're going to sit behind Amiro Garces. He's actually going to be give us the best chance to go win this down the stretch. And Garces's strengths just stand out compared to Mayo Yoshida, and it turned into a great partnership.
Yeah, since Garces entered the starting lineup with, I think it was 4 games left in the regular season, the Galaxy have conceded less than 1 non-penalty expected goal per game, which is a top 5 mark. It might even be top 3 mark in the league over the past couple of months. Before he entered the lineup, they were conceding about 1.5, which is a bottom 10 mark in the league. And it's the fit. I think we saw some in this game, but it was especially evident against the Sounders, because there were 2 or 3 times where it looked like Jordan Morris was through. Jordan Morris in the open field, we all know what he can do. And Garces was there with him step for step, protecting that space in behind the back line. And Jalen Neal's a really gifted player, and he might be able to develop into that, but he's never going to have the speed that Garces has. And that's what the Galaxy needed. If you're going to be a possession team, if you're going to turn the ball over by being ambitious with it, you need to have someone who could be an eraser back there. It is another masterclass from Will Koontz to find this guy who, you know, a few hundred thousand dollars. It's not like he was on any of the Colombia national teams. Like he was not a well-known prospect, but it speaks to the sophistication of what the Galaxy front office is right now to be able to identify players on the cheap, as well as guys like Peck and Paintsil, but players on the cheap and players who fit a need for how they're going to play. Garces is a perfect example. He wasn't perfect. You remember that chance?
Oh yeah.
I think it was a broken or second, like a recycled set piece that Ayla, I think it was in the 33rd minute, 34th minute, Ayla gets an open look from about 9 yards out that goes straight to John McCarthy. Thank God, if you're a Galaxy fan, that would have made it 2-2. Ayla is that open because Garces does not recognize either the cross or the run. And I pulled up the kid's numbers, and like, he is, when he contests an aerial, he's pretty good, but he contests them at a rate more in line with a fullback than a center back. Maya Yoshida contests 3 times as many aerials per 90 than Garces does. It is a stunning difference. So he is a player who still needs to develop a bit, but the good more than outweighs the bad
for how the, I mean, very obviously, the good more than outweighs the bad for how the Galaxy play and what they needed. And he was a wildly influential player throughout the postseason, but especially in the Western Conference Final and MLS Cup.
I mean, I thought he was really good in this game. Just emergency defending any ball that went in behind, and there weren't a ton of them. But any ball that went in behind, he is gobbling it up. It was an early one that he got to and then got fouled, and just sort of a sign of things to come. Like, hey, you play in behind here, I'm going to win the race. And you noticed, I mean, I thought that it didn't really seem like whether they were capable of doing it or just the tendency was to drift wide a little bit more, that Van Zier and Morgan generally weren't running in that central channel in between the center backs. It was more into wide areas. And you know, credit to the Galaxy for taking a lot of that away. By the way, Garcia,
on loan initially,
they triggered immediately before he even got there, I think, the buy option for $1.4 million and gave Garces a 5-year contract. That's looking
that was a
smart.
Little more than I thought it was, but worth every penny for a center back like that who can be that outstanding in MLS Cup.
But the coffee shop wants to start for Elias Manuel. I can tell you that this morning.
Yeah, that was the bit that I was going to steal from Anders. There you go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you think that would have changed anything? Not to jump ahead here, but I'm just thinking about the Rebels. Do you think different personnel would have changed anything in terms of chance creation?
Maybe, but I think it was more that they got rocked so hard in the first 20-25 minutes, and then they were missing that one high end quality piece in it. It's just the same story year after year after year for the Red Bulls. They are one piece away. And Forsberg got them close, but they needed another Forsberg-level player out there. And as much as we all love Elias Manuel, he's not that. So,
hey, but Gabriel Peck was that guy, right? But where Gabriel Peck did not have a Gabriel Peck-esque game, Doyle. And I remember very clearly being there, I believe, when young John Tolkien said that I'm going to kick the living, out of him. And then there was a feeling within the Galaxy camp that like, oh yeah, come on now. John Tolkien, like Gabriel Peck's not gonna be afraid of this dude. Like he played in Brazil, like kick the crap out of me. Come on, man, I've seen worse than that. And then, I don't know, it seemed like Tolkien kind of got the best of that deal, and yet it didn't really matter for the Galaxy.
It just speaks to how well-constructed this Galaxy lineup is, right? We talked about how they were able to replace Ricky with Gaston Brugman, who only went and won MLS Cup MVP. Gabriel Peck is their second best player, and he didn't really show up, or he showed up to the extent that Tolkien really did get the better of him, and it didn't matter. And oh, by the way, they're playing without their $5 million left back and Julian Aude. And I thought John Nelson was really, really good yet again. This is what you want from a CSO, right? You got to get the DP signings right. And obviously they did in Peck and Paintsil. But you also have to get the signings on the margin, the lower profile signings right. Getting Edwin Cerrillo for, I think, a couple hundred thousand in GAM last summer, picking up John Nelson for nothing. Same with John McCarthy in goal. This is all elite stuff from Will Koontz and the new Galaxy front office. And it's, you know, 10 years in the abyss, man. And it took them 3 transfer windows to create an MLS Cup winner. And they didn't just do it by opening their checkbook. It's wildly impressive.
And by the way, one of those transfer windows, the one in which, Cerrillo came in and then Maya Yoshida came in after the close of the window, which he had to because of sanctions that they had. Like he was working under sanctions that severely limited their ability in the middle of last season, 2023, arguably the worst season in Galaxy history, to actively improve the roster. And he still picked up multiple starters in this game through that time. That's pretty incredible. All right, let's turn to the Red Bulls side real quick. Before we do, I'm very curious about what Taylor said, because in terms of the Galaxy's future and these contractual decisions and big changes, because when you look at the roster profiles that MLSPR provides with all the length of contracts and the guaranteed years and option years, it doesn't jump out quite so much that there are going to be huge decisions coming. I mean, Maya Yoshida is out of contract, and he said afterwards, hey, I still want to play. I'm just waiting for the guys to give me a new deal. Outside of that, I mean, Brugman's got a, he's got an option. Not just, he's got no, guaranteed,
Brugman is,
actually.
Brugman is guaranteed. Yeah. Yeah. So that was what I was saying to Taylor. It's like, all right, I thought maybe coming into this game, you could say, well, Brugman should get bought out because he's not delivering on that.
But now without Ricky,
him
and Diego are maybe your two
and
options.
Marco Royce as well. Yes, of course. Right. So at that point you have five central midfielders that you trust, and maybe you bring another kid through the academy as well. So I don't see the amount of moving pieces that Taylor alluded to, because you have to find the money to bring back Yoshida, but you do that by letting Caceres walk. You know, the thing that interests me is, do they get the Godfather offer for Gabriel Peck? Do they get the Godfather offer for Dejan Jovetic? Because if one or both of those things happen, then yeah, you're going back to work real hard this winter if you're that Galaxy front office. But it's just in terms of how this roster is constructed, I don't see the number of moving pieces that Taylor apparently does.
I mean, like Jalen Neal is another potential transfer target. I mean, he has that sort of profile, that background, the previous interest, or at least sniffs around him. So maybe there's another one, but he's not technically a starter at this point, just given an MLS Cup. I don't know. Other things to look at, expansion draft, like could John Nelson potentially be somebody who might be exposed?
Honestly,
in the
I would protect John Nelson over Julian Aude.
I agree.
Aude is really good, but he's coming off an injury and he's on a bigger number. And you know, John Nelson has just proved that he is a MLS Cup caliber starter. He's
just
in his prime.
In the game theory of it, you got to protect Nelson over Aude.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know. Other things you think about is like Mark Delgado, his deal is up guaranteed wise. I think it's an option for next year, but you would think like him and Greg Vanney are as tight as player coach can be. And he's such a valuable piece. He's an LA guy. You'd think you'd just give him, say, Hey, cool. Hey, Mark, you played great, man. We need you. Here's a long-term extension to sort of make sure that
this
isn't an issue.
It's one of those things. You see it a lot in the NBA where it's like, okay, we'll give you more guaranteed years if you take a lower number instead of taking your option, right? Because if you give him, I don't know, 4 years at $600,000 a year, he's still getting paid when he's 33, guaranteed. And that saves you a haircut of a couple hundred thousand of flexibility on next year's roster. But like these are marginal things. And it's also like the Galaxy are going to be fine either way. It's just a really well-constructed, well-balanced roster.
Yeah, I think I'm in the camp firmly of in Will Kuntz we trust, in terms of having played out these scenarios, having targets set, having the financial backing of Galaxy ownership, which has not wavered ever, even in the face of 10 years of failure. I would trust them to find a way to reload, even if some of those Godfather offers do come in. And if they do, they'll have a bunch of money to play with, and they'll have a track record of selling players that they can sell to the next player. All right, let's hit Red Bulls and then do some housekeeping in terms of what cup meant for the Galaxy and other teams as it pertains to the CONCACAF Champions Cup. Red Bulls, what were they missing? Is it as simple as you said, just another top-end attacking piece? I mean, they had the chances. Emil Forsberg, late in the game, hits the post. He has the ball kind of roll past him. It was an unlucky moment for him as well. Like Cameron Harper at the back post on a set piece. You know, they got the goal via set piece to get back in the game. Like on another day, maybe they find that second goal.
Yeah, maybe. But maybe they should go out and buy players like Paintsil and Jovetic and Peck. Right? How many years are we going to see this exact type of thing where they're just one piece short, one high level goal scoring piece short in the biggest games, and applaud them for getting as far as they did. We all know, I think, the world of that Columbus team that they beat, and they survived against NYCFC, and they survived against Orlando City. But this was always going to be a massively uphill struggle for them, given the talent differential. And the only relevant question for the Red Bulls for 2025 is, will Red Bull Global buy out Dante Van Zier and allow this club to replace him with a $10 or $15 million goal scorer? Because that puts you in the situation where Lewis Morgan doesn't have to be your primary goal scorer. he's your secondary goal scorer, and he's your third best attacking player. And if Lewis Morgan is your secondary goal scorer and third best attacking player, and you have that kind of defense and that depth and energy in midfield, then you're cooking. Then you could do more than whip in a million crosses and press. You have the ability to break teams down, even the best teams, even in the biggest moments. Until they do that, we would only be talking about the Red Bulls as a Cinderella run, a dark horse at best. And it almost unfolded for them, and you give them a lot of credit, but like they were, I'm seeing it on social media. I wrote the postmortem, it's up on the site, and all the Red Bulls fans I know are like, yeah, it was just more of the same. We didn't have the same quality as the team we were going against. And that's 15 years of it. Really tough.
$5.3 million, I believe, reported was the Van Zier fee. Just for reference and like side by side comparison, that's it. $4 million for the Galaxy to get Dan Jovic. So like there is an element of spend, and I completely agree with you. I'm still holding up that more ambition sign from the summer. There is also an element of like identifying the right players and having the right structure around them for the Red Bulls. And look, I just, you know, I'm not sure that like, yeah, you go sign the promising second division Polish striker. Just don't sign that guy to be relied upon in any way immediately in terms of production on the field. Sign him as a gamble. You know, because that's essentially what it is. You have to go out, just like you did with Emil Forsberg, by the way, in a different way, not a transfer fee style way, but a big-time salary type of way. Go out and find the guy that is proven, that will deliver in those moments. And, you know, ideally, I would say find him in a prime age band as well, or an early prime age band. Yeah. What about Forsberg? What'd you think of his performance in this game?
Struggled to find the game, but... A lot of that was because it was 2-0 before anybody had a chance to put a foot on the ball.
It was 2-0 before he got a touch.
Yeah. And honestly, the Red Bulls didn't come out of the locker room. They were so shook by the Reyes thing that they didn't come out of the locker room. And at that point, you know, it was 70 minutes of, I thought the Red Bulls were probably more dangerous over the course of that 70 minutes, but it was all via stuff that, like it was all happening in front of the Galaxy defense. And when you have to do, that's how you have to play, then you need those extra pieces of quality. And Forsberg showed some of it. He's very much in the right spot at the right time on a couple of those clearances. And I thought he had some sort of clever passes that created a little rhythm for the Red Bulls, especially when they were going up that left side. But it, you know, it never felt like he was taking over the game. And that's a credit to the Galaxy, but it's also like he's the only one on that team who could conceivably take over a game of this magnitude. So it makes it easier to game plan for.
I have to give a massive amount of props to the organization, to the club, to all the fans and supporters who made this trip. I mean, the Red Bulls as a club bought 2,200 tickets. They bought 700 for the South Ward. My understanding is they gave those 700 $300 travel vouchers, you know, because last second travel across the country is inherently expensive. And there was a huge contingent. It was basically the entire, probably 60% of the upper deck area at Dignity Health. And then I was right next to, because I got my brother-in-law and his fiance tickets to the game as well, and I went and sat with them for about 20 minutes. That was right next to what I believe to be the Red Bulls staff section, which stood the entire game and was absolutely packed. And I was there when they went down 2-0, and that dampened their enthusiasm a little bit, but it did not send them to their butts and seats. So it just seemed like a celebration of a day for those fans, but one that ultimately was missing that little bit that they've been missing for so long. All right, trickle down from the Galaxy winning MLS Cup. The Sounders have now qualified for CONCACAF Champions Cup. And Doyle, there is there's a trend here as it pertains to MLS Cup winners and CCC.
Yeah, I didn't realize this until a follower on Blue Sky pointed it out to me, and I apologize. I forgot to write down who sent this to me, but you're probably listening to this show, so shout at me again. But anyway, no MLS Cup winner has played in the CONCACAF Champions Cup in the same season since the format switched to the single calendar year back in 2018.
Whoa.
In fact, what we've seen is that playing in CCL really takes it out of teams by the end of the year. Four of the last five MLS Cup winners missed the playoffs completely the season before.
Yikes.
Including these LA guys. Remember, this Galaxy team just missed the playoffs in 2023. The only outlier in that is NYCFC, who, of course, won MLS Cup in 2021. They made the playoffs in 2020, but that was the shortened COVID season. That's the only exception. So if you are playing in CONCACAF Champions Cup, it is a big ask to still be standing in the final 90 minutes of the season. And it is an even bigger ask to be hoisting a trophy after it's all said and done.
Okay, so who's the ask going to get big for? By the way, CONCACAF Champions Cup draw is on Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on the CONCACAF YouTube channel. So we'll go CONCACAF draw on Tuesday night into the expansion draft on Wednesday night. Free agency will open. I haven't checked because I'm exhausted from cross-country travel myself. And
is Thursday the
That's
12th.
What I thought. Yes, so
the list comes out tomorrow, the 10th.
Yeah, get ready. It's going to start moving fast here, folks. I mean, as soon as that final whistle blows, we are off and running. So the teams that are going to have to buck history if they want to play in CCC and win MLS Cup, the Crew and the Galaxy will enter in the round of 16, the Crew via Leagues Cup and the Galaxy, of course, via MLS Cup. LAFC, Colorado are both in via Leagues Cup. Vancouver's in via Canadian Championship. Sporting Kansas City via the Open Cup. Miami, Cincinnati, and RSL all in via MLS play, as are the Sounders, as I mentioned. So that gets us to 10 MLS teams in the CONCACAF Champions Cup.
Weeby.
Yeah.
Taylor very bravely picked Atlanta as his dark horse to win MLS Cup next year. In my top five MLS Cup candidates for 2025, I picked the Dynamo as my dark horse. So now I'm putting it on you.
The Dynamo. Okay. So, and then your top five, remind me, I'm sorry, my brain is...
The two LA teams, the two Ohio teams, and Miami. And now bear in mind that list of 10 teams that are playing in CONCACAF Champions Cup next year. So when you choose your dark horse to win, you would be wise
to choose outside, to obviously.
Yeah, yes, which yes. Taylor did and which I unknowingly did.
Yeah, I'm going to go outside, obviously, and as a reverse jinx of sort, as a reward for years of withstanding my trolls, St. Louis City and Olaf Melberger coming out of nowhere with these two Bundesliga all-stars to make history as a dark
They've
horse.
They've cracked the code.
A dark horse is the key word here. I'll have to think harder on that. But St. Louis, you're getting my vote for the time being. By the way, as we think about scheduling and competitions, just to put a bow on Champions Cup and everything that comes potentially with that as well, Don Garber's State of the League, the commissioner always does a really interesting Q&A before MLS Cup. Some of the things he said in that one that'll pertain to this, more teams in the U.S. Open Cup for MLS. There's been some bean spilling, it seems. We're kind of reading between the lines from Ernst Tanner and then Chris Albright, in that maybe not all non-playoff teams will play an Open Cup and playoff teams will go to Leagues Cup. Look, if that happens, I think that's a great solution in terms of that creates more MLS versus Liga MX games and Leagues Cup because the numbers are more even. And then there are more teams in U.S. Open Cup, and we love that competition as well. And it just, anytime a team can play for a trophy, that is something I think is extremely important for clubs and for fan bases and players and coaches. Some other stuff scheduling-wise, he said they're still considering the swap of schedule post-2026 to what would be a European schedule. MLS will not play through the World Cup in 2026, and MLS will break for the Gold Cup / the Club World Cup as well. Okay, anything to add on that? Anything to wrap up from MLS Cup? Any questions for me since I was there? I mean, I barely remember it. It's like a fever dream, but...
Did you get the celebrity treatment from fans around the stadium?
You know
stadium?
What? I do want to say a really hearty thank you to every single person. And incredibly, there were a lot of you that came up and just said, hey, what's up? Can I get a selfie? Or just wanted to talk about the game, or just wanted to say, hey, I've been listening to Extra Time for 10 years. It is really, really appreciated, because sometimes I think it can feel like, and Doyle, correct me if I'm wrong here, that we're just talking to ourselves. You know what I mean? Like, and that's
and
fine.
The cats.
That's true. And Anders and Maria. But that's fine. Like, these are, you know, you guys are my best friends in the world. Like, this is what I would want to be doing regardless. But then when you go to an event like this and you meet people and you see people and they say, hey, this is something I make a part of my life and I really enjoy and brings me something to smile about, that is truly, truly special. And then I was trying to get my brother-in-law and his fiance into like the hospitality area and like taking them around the stadium. They're not MLS fans at all. When I got them tickets, they're like, oh, what's this? And they're like, oh, is this like the Super Bowl of MLS? I was like, yes, that's exactly what it is. But I was taking them around and a bunch of people stopped me and they're like, oh my God, are you a celebrity? And I said, yes, in one place in the world. This is the only place that is true. But this is that one place. So a big thank you to everybody who hollered and said, what's up? I really, really appreciate you. Okay, you want to talk offseason real quick?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, open coaching spots. Atlanta, New York City, Philadelphia, Toronto, Vancouver. Five are open at this time. We talked about it with Taylor Tolman. Keno teased that he's going to be in talks to coach an MLS team on the season pass coverage. If you were looking at those five teams and saying, this team is most likely to hire Robbie Keane to be its next manager, which club would it be?
Probably Vancouver.
Which one would Robbie Keane want to go to?
Vancouver. Yeah, I mean, I think he would want to go to any of them from what I've heard. He's really eager to get into MLS as a coach. And like, I'm not against that at all. Vancouver are a team that has a strong British influence or Premier League influence. And obviously Robbie spent most of his career in the Premier League. So I think there's probably a lingua franca there. It is a ready-made team in terms of competing, and he's a manager without a track record of development. So it's like, okay, I think you probably want to give him something that he can just take and try to get that extra 10% out of. That's the one that would make the most sense. But my understanding is that he would listen to any and all potential offers.
I'm just asking the question because I don't actually know, because his managerial time is relatively short. He's been an assistant in the Champo. He's been an assistant with Ireland. I think he might have been an assistant in the Premier League for a hot second. No, I think I was with Leeds in the Championship. Then he was at Maccabi Tel Aviv, I believe, for a year in Israel in a weird season in the COVID years. And I think they won the league. But do we know he's not a developmental coach? Like,
We don't know. I'm just assuming usually with a new coach or, you know, a guy who doesn't have a ton of experience, from what I've seen, very few of them are immediately like, yeah, let's start getting the most out of this 18-year-old on the roster.
Interesting. I mean, I think New York City was one that jumped out to me just because I feel like they have the pieces to be like a, honestly, like a MLS Cup contending team, not a favorite, I wouldn't say, but a contending team. I don't know. We'll see, man. That'd be interesting. We already talked about how the doors have sort of opened in terms of interest
Taylor,
from foreign managers.
Did you catch when Taylor mentioned Jim Curtin for NYCFC?
I didn't pick up on that. I must have been trying to put out the fire on my shrine, or at least like tamp it down just a bit.
That's something going around social media as well. I don't think Taylor would have mentioned it like that if it was just a social media thing.
By the way, things going around on social media. We are doing this show live right now during the half-day trade window. I tweeted at Tom, let's go, Tom Bogert, chop, chop, when the window opened. He just tweeted back at me, quote, have I made you proud yet, Andrew, in all caps? And Tom, you have indeed made me proud. I'm looking at some deals here. So Tom has tweeted that Cruzeiro have officially declined the purchase option on Alvaro Barrial, still assuming that a transfer will happen for Barrial this winter and that he would not return to Cincinnati. Tyler Wolf has been traded to RSL from Atlanta United for $50,000 in GAM. That's like a good little flyer from RSL on a young guy with potential. Sources per Tom, Bournemouth have agreed a deal in principle with DC United to sign Mattia Akinboni, the 18-year-old center back from DC. That would be around $2.5 million plus a sell-on clause. And then here's the big one. Strap in, baby. The Colorado Rapids are finalizing a deal to acquire center back Chidozie Awuzie and Ian Murphy from FC Cincinnati. The deal would be worth $1 million in GAM plus add-ons. So Awuzie on the move after signing in the summer for Cincinnati, and Murphy, who's played 105 times for Cincinnati, joining him to reinforce the back line of the Rapids, who needed it after selling Moise Bombito last summer. That's interesting. It tells you a lot about the Miles Robinson and Matt Miazga combination for Cincinnati. But boom, Awazium turned into a trade chip pretty quickly.
Yeah, I was surprised about that one. I didn't think he was great with Cincinnati, and maybe that was an effect of playing in that back five instead of a back four. He's really good passer of the ball, but he was error prone, and I don't think he read the space that well. So I could see why they determined he was, he was a trade chip. I'm surprised Murphy was included. I thought Murphy was a solid, third or fourth center back on the depth chart, but that's well done from Colorado. The flip side, it tells you what they think about Matt Miazga getting back to health. It tells you what they think about Nick Haglund getting back to full health and, being re-signed, I assume, a good number. It also tells me they're probably going to keep Teenage Hadebe. And maybe it tells us that they like the idea of DeAndre Yedlin as sort of a hyper-mobile right center back in that three.
And to give Orochano, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they said they want Orochano higher up the field too. So I don't know. Maybe it's a center forward that they go get off the market, then Orochano and Lucho behind him. Is it Lucho? I mean, that's probably a good transition into the biggest transfer stories.
Yeah, it's the biggest question. It really is.
Boy, do we have any updated prediction on that? Bengals Nut hit us up and he wants to know our prediction on Acosta. I think I've said that I expect him to be back. I mean, the number that he's on, the guaranteed contract, the quality that he obviously brings. I feel like a cooling down period for all parties is sort of what's going down now, and that come February we'll see Lucho in Cincinnati, because I mean, let's be real, like he's not going to get more money, I wouldn't think, elsewhere.
So the only one that comes to mind is Boca Juniors, and he's been outspoken about kind of wanting to go back to Boca Juniors, and honestly I think if the right offer came in, I think Cincinnati would absolutely listen to that, because you can go out with that checkbook and bring in another 10. But as of right now, I'm with you. I think he'll be back. I think they'll find a way to make him happy and make it all good. I have Cincinnati as the number two team in my top five favorites heading into 2025. I am going to remain wildly optimistic about this team until they give me reason not to be.
Other big story is obviously around Major League Soccer, as we dive headfirst into this offseason, mere hours after MLS Cup is over. I mean, Atlanta United is the big one still for me. I would argue this is one of the biggest off seasons in the history of MLS, just based on the ambitions of the club and where they've been really since they won that MLS Cup. There is news this morning in Atlanta. It's not a transfer of sorts, but it's a big hire. Dave Tenney is the director of high performance. If you don't know who Dave Tenney is, he was the Sounders director of a performance in those really productive, awesome years. He's been at Austin, I believe, recently. One of the guys that really, around Major League Soccer, if not the guy that really sort of pioneered the combination of data and physical performance and combining the two and making it predictive and creating a process around it. He and Ravi Ramaneni really were a big part of that in Seattle. And if you're getting the gang back together, Doyle, you might as well get Chris Henderson back in the group as well. Just saying.
You would think, but we haven't heard anything about that yet. We don't know exactly Chris Henderson's contract status with Inter Miami, though.
But hey, contracts usually end of the year.
They do.
That's generally the way contracts often work, so
it would make a lot of sense. I'm going to bring it back to that little interview we had with Taylor, where he mentioned that he does not think Jim Curtin will be the head coach of Atlanta. That caught me off guard a little bit, especially given how Garth Lagerwey has talked about valuing someone with experience winning in MLS, and Jim Curtin has, of course, won a Supporters Shield and a lot else. So that, I don't know if that opens up the potential coaching search or it narrows it down some. What I will say is I would keep refreshing Tom's Twitter feed, Blue Sky feed.
Go find, I don't know, if you got a suggestion on a winner that you think could be a good fit there, Atlanta fans, we are absolutely happy.
Will you take the job?
I have not yet won. I have witnessed winning. I have not yet personally won, which is
you're unbeaten in our NBA fantasy league, man. Come on.
That's true. 5-0. David Goss taking that heavy L on Sunday. Try to multitask, son. I was in LA too, buddy. I was in LA too. All right. Other stories here. Can the Crew keep the group together and add a third DP? Doyle?
That's a huge one. It's a huge
Wilfred
one.
Nancy is I think the number one part of the Crew.
Yeah, Wilfred Nancy, especially because they lost Tim Bezbachenko midseason, right? Like we've already seen the allure of working, I think, specifically in the Premier League. So that's one to keep an eye on. Kucho, you know, there are other, Mo Farsi, Patrick Schulte. There are a lot of pieces that have, I think, made themselves attractive on the global transfer market. And look, that's the business. Then the other part of that is they moved Darlington Nagbe off of a full DP slot last year. They did that thing that I was talking about with Mark Delgado, where they lowered his cap hit to give him more guaranteed years. That gives them the flexibility to go out and get another full-on DP. They could add another Diego Rossi or another Cucho if they decide that's what it takes to get them over the hump.
They got to keep Cucho too, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's all in play for Columbus. Given how much I like watching that team, I hope they not only keep all their pieces, but I hope they really go for it. Add another $10 million attacker to that team and let him cook.
I mean, I guess you got to keep Diego Rossi as well, TBD. All right, keep looking around here. We mentioned Club World Cup. I mean, the Sounders have that DP spot that you would think they would have, and then Rusnak's a free agent, so there's a lot going on with the Sounders as well. Inter Miami announced their roster decisions this morning. It's all sort of, you know, it makes sense who's staying and who's going, but they will do a bunch of work ahead of competing on a bunch of fronts. Antoine Griezmann, now we're in the summer. I mean, let's predict again. I mean, you can just fire it away. Just, this is a guess. You don't have to be held to this. Now
he had a goal and assist. Yeah, he had a goal assist this weekend. He's still a huge part of that team. I think they're going to have to wait till the summer. Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like summer. Other big ones. I mean, 3G, Greg Berhalter building the Chicago Fire. It's a big one.
I mean, they could spend as much money as Atlanta do. It wouldn't shock me at all if they spent upwards of $30 million on the two DP slots that they have open. Like, and then they have U22 slots beyond that as well.
You have to wonder, maybe there's a possibility that they, in terms of like the size of rebuild it is, sort of don't slow roll it, but like try to take it through two windows or maybe even three as they're rebuilding this entire roster, basically. And then Bruce Arena is doing the same. He already got a bunch of veterans in as he raided the sort of the unwanteds at the Revs, but got some really good MLS veteran talent in return. And there's rumors that Brandon Vasquez could go to the San Jose Earthquakes. Would that be a good signing for this Quakes team?
I think it would. I do think they undervalued Jeremy Abobasi and just letting him walk. Vasquez is a similar player, but he's a year younger and he's probably a little bit better. So it makes a lot of sense. He's at the right age profile. Bruce has, I'm not saying always, but he has tended to like a true target guy. And that's what Vasquez is. I think it would work really well with Christian Espinoza. Hopefully it would unlock something from Hernan Lopez, who, you know, Gauss theorem candidate next year. One thing I will say is, like, Bruce has done this five times in the past where he takes a team that looked really bad and turns them into a really good team really quickly. You could definitely see Vasquez being part of the answer for that.
Okay, I've refreshed Tom Bogert's Twitter feed. I see no other breaking news before we close this show. Anything at the conclusion of a 29th season, Doyle, that you would like to add? Any messages you would like to send? You graciously gave me that opportunity regarding the folks that said what's up at Cup. Anything that you'd like to drop in as we close the show?
Just something I want us all to think about. From 2020 to 2022, the correlation between possession and points per game became totally decoupled in MLS. Like, there was no advantage, either real or perceived, in actually having the ball. Over the past couple of years, that has reversed, where it's become, the correlation between possession and points per game since the start of 2023 season has been stronger in MLS than it ever has in the past. And you see it with the teams who are winning trophies. In you know, 2023, it was Miami, a possession team winning Leagues Cup. It was Columbus, a possession team, winning MLS Cup. It was Houston, a possession team, winning the Open Cup. The only outlier were Cincinnati, who were not a bad possession team, but they're really more of a transition team, winning the Shield. In 2024, Miami, who were, I think, fourth in possession, they won the Shield. Columbus were second in possession. They won Leagues Cup. Galaxy were third in possession. They won MLS Cup. The outlier were LAFC, who were almost a pure transition team by the time they won U.S. Open Cup later in the year. Just something to think about as the tactics in this league evolve and as the talent level in this league evolves. And as we all keep refreshing Tommy Scoops' social media feeds to see who is the next big player who will be joining us in MLS. Weeby, you ready for those fish tacos?
I am fully prepared for some San Diego treats. I am not prepared for yet another cross-country flight there and back, but I will get my mind
stretch
wrapped
back,
around that
man.
One.
Stretch your back.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Get those hip flexors firing. All right. Thank you so much, everyone who has been here with us for a really fun, a really entertaining, and a quality 2024 MLS season. The Galaxy are your champions. Their sixth MLS Cup. They are far and away the most successful team in league history in terms of putting stars on their chest. I guess now, Doyle, they've had the five stars with the gold star. Do you just go a gold star and another star now? Is that what we're going to see next year? I guess
it sounds like a feature from our guy, Charlie Bohm. Got to get him out to Carson again and figure out how they want to do it.
There we go. Let's get Charlie out there. All right. We will see you later on this week to break down all the comings and goings. In the meantime, congratulations, all you Galaxy supporters out there. You're back. And everyone else, Schadenfreude. Hopefully they go down next year. Adios.